Have a wonderful time, and I'll see you afterwards. Okay.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. So, hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here. And let's start with a meditation. And I want to do something a little different today. So close your eyes and get quiet, whatever that means to you. And for today's meditation, I'd like to read you three short writings that are pertinent to today's topic. The first is called The Welcoming Prayer by Father Thomas Keating. And it says, welcome, welcome, welcome. I welcome everything that comes to me in this moment because I know it's for my healing. I welcome all thoughts, feelings, emotions, persons, situations, and conditions. I let go of my desire for security. I let go of my desire for affection. I let go of my desire for control. I let go of my desire to change any situation, condition, person, or myself. I open to the love and presence of God and the healing action and grace within. The next is a poem by Rumi. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. And third and last, this is something by Thomas Merton. Some of us need to discover that we will not begin to live more fully until we have the courage to do and see and taste and experience much less than usual. There are times then when in order to keep ourselves in existence at all, we simply have to sit back for a while and do nothing. And for a man who has let himself be drawn completely out of himself by his activity, nothing is more difficult than to sit still and rest, doing nothing at all. The very act of resting is the hardest and most courageous act he can perform. Thomas Merton. So, with those thoughts in mind, open your eyes. And as you listen to this song and to my talk, see if you can sit as much as possible in this state of stillness and openness, which I like to call rest and digest. This first video was a performance from a show of my own songs that I did at the Firebird about 24 years ago. Leo?
A few years ago, my friend Jim Fall called me and he said, when I do my movie, you're going to score it. Now, Jim had never done a movie, so I said, yeah. And 2 years ago, he called me and he said, I'm doing my movie. With Good Machine, no less, which is one of my favorite film companies. And so I got to score the wonderful film Trick. And yes, I love that film. And it's so rare that you know, a lot of these songs that I write them just because I have to and for no reason. But then you also write things on assignment where you're hired to do something. And it's so rare that you get to write something on assignment that's so deeply meaningful to you. Not only is Trick a beautiful gay love story, but it also explores a kind of isolation and pain combined with hopefulness that I know a lot about. So I was very happy to write the score, and especially the title song, Trick of Fate. I never thought I'd find someone like you. Though in my every fantasy, I saw you every day. I thought there was no way make my dream come true. I always thought that I would be alone,
to dream that anyone was ever gonna see the love inside of me. But how could I have known? A trick of fate would bring us together. A trick of fate would alter our lives. We had to wait, it seemed like forever.
I was at a wedding last year, and I was seated next to an old friend who had brought his boyfriend, who he was set to marry in a few weeks. And I struck up a conversation with the boyfriend and found him to be one of the kindest, most intelligent, sweetest, empathetic men I'd ever met. And as we were talking, I thought to myself, I wonder how a guy this charming and smart could just be finding a partner for the first time at age 60. So I asked him, have you ever been in a relationship before? And he said, oh yes, I was in a 27-year relationship. When I asked him what happened, he said, well, I was sitting at home one night making dinner and my husband called and he said, I'll be home in 20 minutes. And a half hour later, there was a knock on my door and it was the police to tell me that my husband had been killed in a car accident. And I said, my God, how awful. How did you deal with that? And he said, well, I fell apart. And then I went to a trauma therapist who tried to help me through it. And he had me cry, had me scream, he had me rail. He had me think about other possibilities, let go, get out into the world, change, et cetera. And he said, it didn't work at all. And then he told me, he went to a Buddhist therapist who said, yes, this is what happened. Your husband was killed suddenly and shockingly. You felt bereft and empty and horrible and hopeless and continue to feel that way. This is the way it is. this is something that happened to you. This is a memory that is part of your life and will be with you for the rest of your life. This is the reality, and there's no changing it. I asked him how that worked for him, and he said, well, it's now 7 years later, and I am not any less bereft, any less in pain over this loss than I was 7 years ago. But because I can be with it fully, just as it is, I'm capable of loving the man I'm about to marry completely. This was a real eye-opener. So many of us have spent our lives trying to run from, get over, get under, get around trauma, trying to feel better, trying not to think of certain things, searching for a relationship or a success that will make us happy and make us forget, taking drugs, drinking, trying to get to a place where we're not upset. And here was someone who was able to be successful and in love and alive and happy, not by running, but by turning around and including and being with what is. There's a wonderful parable about a group of Buddhist monks who are walking toward a palace. And there are these two guard dogs, vicious dogs, chained to the fence. And all of a sudden, one of them breaks out and starts running after the monks, teeth bared, claws out. And all the monks start running, screaming. But one monk turns around, looks right at the dog, and the dog lies down and starts wagging its tail. This all makes me think of the Rumi quote, which is the title of this talk. The cure for the pain is in the pain. In unity, we espouse the principle that God is omnipresence, omniscience, love, goodness itself, and that everything that is and everything that happens is within God. And then we go and say, this or that shouldn't have happened. This is terrible. This is bad. God shouldn't have done this. I can't go on until I fix this. I've got to get away from this and make sure it doesn't happen again. Well, as Sean always says, either God is or God isn't. If we are living our principles, then we must look at everything that happens as being in God, and as such, having a positive purpose, even when we can't figure out what that purpose is. So with this in mind, maybe living, being happy and successful, is not about trying to change and control outside circumstances, but about expanding our internal ability to be with what is. Hence the quote by James Dillard Friedman, Unity's Freeman, I'm Friedman, he's Freeman, Unity's poet laureate. Sometimes the answer to prayer is not that it changes life, but that it changes you. Maybe when upsets that resemble our early upsets keep happening over and over, rather than beating ourselves up and complaining, what am I doing wrong that I keep drawing this to me? We might instead ask the question, what am I doing right that I keep drawing this to me? And look at the idea that we constantly draw different versions of old hurts to ourselves, not because we're stupid or not because we're supposed to get rid of them and can't, but rather because we're giving ourselves opportunities to be with the level of pain we couldn't be with in the past, to contain and live with our sensations and reactions rather than having to get rid of them. What's happened has happened. There's no getting rid of it, or around it, or over it. Perhaps only when we can accept and live with what happened and how it feels can we truly live free, fulfilled, happy, productive lives. From my personal experience with panic and anxiety over the years, I have come to the conclusion that the bad news is it will never go away. The good news is it doesn't have to. Trauma specialist Dr. Gabor Mate says that the attempt to escape from pain is what creates more pain. Confronting and working through our pain can lead to greater self-awareness, resilience, and ultimately a sense of inner peace and healing. The process of facing our pain head on, rather than numbing or escaping from it, can be a transformative journey that ultimately leads to personal growth and spiritual awakening. My friend Alan Menken, one of the most successful and productive people I know, used to say, I get up in the morning, I pick up my big bag of crap, I throw it over my shoulder, and I proceed. Grief is one of those areas where, try as we might to get over it, it's always with us because we've lost something or someone that we can't get back. Grief counselor Lois Tonkin explains, that people tend to believe that grief shrinks over time. But what really happens is we grow around our grief. This drawing is a wonderful visual demonstration of that idea. Leo, can you bring up the drawing? Is it up? I don't see it. Leo? Okay, well, let me describe it to you then. It's a picture of three jars that are the same size, and there's a ball in the first jar, and each succeeding ball gets smaller. And then under it is a picture of three jars with the same size ball in each jar, but the ball stays the same and the jars get bigger. So the ball is less of a percentage of the whole jar, but it doesn't get smaller. In the first row of pictures, the container remains the same and the grief gets small. There it is. Okay, there you see it. Thank you, Leo. In the first row of pictures, the container remains the same and the grief gets smaller. In the second row, the grief in the container doesn't get smaller. The container gets bigger. So the grief or pain becomes less of a percentage of the whole, and we have more space in our lives for the things we want to have in our lives while still having room for the pain. Like my friend, who was able to love his future husband fully because he had space for him, even though the grief was still there. So, if the cure for the pain is in the pain, and the answer is not to run, but to sit still with it and let forces greater than ourselves come into play, the question is, how do we find ways to turn around and face our challenges and traumas? Okay, thanks, Leo. We can take the vision now. I recently took a workshop in Chinese medicine, and the teacher was talking about the fact that we essentially have two nervous systems, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, and each of those nervous systems performs a different function. The sympathetic, better known as fight or flight, is the nervous system that responds to danger with a stress response, making our hearts beat faster to send blood to our extremities so we have more energy to either run away or turn around and fight. In fight or flight, the energies are directed toward getting away from the pain one way or another, either by running from it or fighting against it. The parasympathetic nervous system, on the other hand, better known as rest and digest, is where we can recover from stress, heal and repair our bodies, experience a sense of serenity no matter what is going on, and live in a sense of openness, infiniteness, and possibility much broader than just fighting or fleeing. Our parasympathetic nervous system is the place from which we can turn around, face and be with our pain, and reap the benefits that facing our pain produces. When we are in rest and digest, we are still, we are inactive. It's not that we don't notice or experience our anxiety, our pain, our sadness, our uncomfortable sensations, our racing thoughts. It's just that we don't go into action over them, but rather allow ourselves to simply experience them, and by doing so, allow healing processes beyond our consciousness to take place, like what happens in sleep or meditation. I like to think of rest and digest like the Sabbath. The Bible says, God made the world in 6 days, and then on the seventh, God rested. To me, this is a metaphor for the idea that when we work towards something, we have to take time to rest so that the part of creation that is not in our conscious awareness or control has a chance to do its work. In the Jewish religion, you take one day, Saturday, where you don't work, you don't cook, you don't handle money, you don't drive, you don't do business, you don't talk on the phone. You simply spend the day and rest and digest. In doing this, you are in essence getting out of the way of God, so God has a chance to take over and do all the work that you don't know how to do. We don't need to wait till Saturday or Sunday to take a Sabbath. We can take time for a Sabbath every day or even every hour. I might suggest that whenever you feel stuck or don't know what to do next, rather than fighting or fleeing, pause and take a Sabbath for a minute, for 10 seconds, for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes. This teacher of Chinese medicine pointed out that most people in our society today never fall below a low-level state of fight or flight. In other words, with the exception of a portion of our sleep, if we do sleep, or meditation, if we meditate, we spend the vast majority of our time in at least a low level of stress and alarm. Given what this fight or flight state turns on in our bodies, a sense of anxiety and fear, and what it turns off, our sense of serenity and our powers of healing, we can see how living our lives in fight or flight can lead to discomfort, disease, depression, anxiety, and all sorts of undesirable states of body and mind. So with the understanding that many of us are stuck in fight or flight and need to spend more time in rest and digest, our Wednesday evening Thought Exchange Zoom group set out to explore how we might go about getting into rest and digest. We began with a 5-minute meditation in which we simply instructed our bodies to go into rest and digest without knowing how that might happen. Almost everyone noticed the moment we thought rest and digest, our bodies spontaneously took a breath. Try it now. Close your eyes. Say to yourself, rest and digest. And notice what happens. Rest and digest. Did your body take a breath spontaneously by itself? The next thing most of us noticed, that was when we let go of the grip of fight or flight, we would get uncomfortable sensations and our mind would react to them by going into some sort of figuring out, projecting, worrying, problem solving. In short, we jump back into a form of fight or flight. Fight or flight seemed to be our instinctive, habitual go-to. The instruction was, when we noticed that we were in fight or flight, to not grapple with it or resist it, but rather do our best to go back into rest and digest. We came to understand that when we'd had trauma as young children or in some earlier time in our lives, when we didn't have the ability to find safety or comfort, we learned that it could be very dangerous to relax and let our guard down. And over the years, we got into the reflexive habit of reaching for a state of fight or flight whenever anything that in any way resembled our earliest danger occurred. It's a habit that can be challenging to break, but we resolved to continue working on it. Over the following weeks, as we continued to practice getting into rest and digest, people reported that in rest and digest, it wasn't that they didn't have thoughts of fear or uncomfortable sensations, but rather that they were just able to be with them without having to take action. They were able to be still while allowing everything to be exactly as it was. Rest and digest isn't an absence of problems or uncomfortable sensations. In fact, it's often the opposite. It's allowing it all to be there without having to go into action. As people stayed in this state, they found that they were able to hear the birds, connect with nature and other people, and to feel a sense of calm within whatever storm might be going on. And then they began to notice that when they spent more time in rest and digest, solutions began to present themselves. Things they never thought of came to mind. And things would even happen that seemed to be outside of themselves. Surprise phone calls, money coming in, circumstances just seeming to resolve. It's solutions of which they had not been consciously aware. They had access to more information and possibility by being in rest and digest. It began to occur to me that most of us, including myself, think of life as a constant state of fight or flight, of having to accomplish, to do, to fight, to protect ourselves, worry, with an occasional foray into rest and digest. And I thought, what if life is meant to be lived in rest and digest, with an occasional and brief foray into fight or flight if, say, a saber-toothed tiger is chasing you? So, at this point, you might be thinking, all this neurological stuff is very interesting and useful, but why am I getting all this information at a Unity Sunday talk? What does this have to do with Unity? Well, here's the thing. In fight or flight, we are relying on what we know, on ourselves. We feel a sense of fear. We have the thought that we're in danger and that we personally have to do something about it. And we take action to get away from or rid of that danger. and rest and digest. We are sitting still, allowing things to be as they are, allowing ourselves to experience our pain without rushing into action. And when we don't rush into fight or flight, but stay and rest and digest, we allow greater forces, forces we don't know about, forces that might seem to be outside of us. In short, the infinite wisdom of omnipresence, of omniscience, of God, to come into play. And rest and digest, we are in essence, opening to, accepting, even welcoming and trusting what God has given us in terms of circumstances and in terms of our thoughts and sensations. And rest and digest, we are letting go and letting God. And God, there are solutions to every problem, ways we can't imagine that things can work out, hidden gifts in occurrences that we don't understand or that seem negative. In fight or flight, our access and openness to all this is turned off, and we're left running from or fighting the pain. In rest and digest, we can look at the pain, experience it from a safe vantage point, and allow greater forces, natural forces, to reveal the healing that the pain or the painful circumstance contains. In fight or flight, we disconnect from God and all the mysterious healing power God contains. Rest and digest allows us to be still and know God, and by so doing, to let all those forces do their work. When we hit a crisis, we don't have a choice about the sensations we feel or the thoughts that come to mind. They come unbidden. But we do have a choice as to whether we turn toward fight or flight or toward rest and digest, whether we turn toward trying to use our own devices or toward letting go and letting God. I love the analogy of skidding in a car. When we hit a skid, every instinct in our body tells us to slam on the brakes and turn away from the skid. But if we do that, the skid worsens. If instead we take our foot off the brake and turn in the direction of the skid, the car rides itself, because there are principles of physics. And of course, who other than God created physics that we can only allow to come into play when we turn directly toward the skid? One member of Thought Exchange Wednesday Zoom group thinks of it as swiping on his phone. He holds the image of looking at his phone and he says to himself, oh, I'm in fight or flight. Swipe left. And I'm in rest and digest. Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, was a shining example of healing through rest and digest. In fact, Unity was founded on the experience of rest and digest that Myrtle had. When Myrtle found out she had a terminal illness and was told that the doctors could do nothing for her, rather than running from doctor to doctor or trying medical cure after medical cure, Myrtle got still. She looked right at the affected organs, apologized once for thinking of them as sick, and then praised them while continuing to look right at them, knowing that healing was inherent in her body and in God, and all she had to do was request it and get out of the way. Knowing this was her way of sitting in rest and digest, and the infinite forces always inherent and available in God did the rest, and she was healed. So this week, when you hit a crisis, big or small, notice that you have a choice. You can fly into action in fight or flight and be stuck with your own devices, fighting against something that has actually come up in order to heal you, or go into rest and digest, look at the pain, feel the pain, and let the infinite forces of God work it out. This week, let's see if we can spend at least a little more time choosing rest and digest, and a little less choosing fight or flight, or in terms of unity, living in God, rather than leaving ourselves to our own devices. As challenging as it may be, I know which choice I aspire to. And when I make that choice and choose God, rather than my own limited thinking, life gets so much better, so much easier, even with the pain, and perhaps even because of the pain. After all, whether we choose to notice it or not, it's all God. And if it's all God, then God is in the pain. And if God is in the pain, then the cure for the pain is in the pain. As always, it's a joy and a privilege to speak at Unity of New York, which forever remains my first Unity home. If you have any questions about what I've talked about or are interested in joining our Wednesday evening Thought Exchange Zoom group, which a number of you are already members of, feel free to get in touch with me. This next song is from my 1991 Cathedral of St. John the Divine concert when I was young and had dark hair and more of it. And it's a song about how I had a dream. I had no idea how it would come true, but I held on to my dream, stayed in rest and digest, and life worked it out. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
I think this next song may be my favorite song that I ever wrote. I'm gonna sing it for you. You, I knew that you were the one for me. I didn't know how to tell you, but I knew how it would be. We'd live in a house on a hill and spend our days making love. I didn't know how we'd get there. All I knew was what I was dreaming of. Days went by, and still I didn't say a word, waiting for you to hear the music I'd already heard. I didn't know just what to do to try and win your love, so I didn't do anything. I just held on tight to what I was dreaming of. And then one summer day, no different from the rest, I was walking east and you were walking west. And we just chanced to meet and sat down for a rest. And then your eyes met mine, and oh my heart, there it was. And now we live here in this house upon a hill, and we spend days like this just making love as lovers will. And when I look into your eyes and see them fill, God must smile on those who hold on tight to what they are dreaming of. I didn't know when, I didn't know how, but I held on tight and I've got my dream.
Thank you, David Friedman, for all of it. Oh my God, so much practical spiritual wisdom that you gave us today. And I know that people are going to want more access to your ideas as they rest and digest this week and going into the future. So can you tell us, you know, some more about some of your books that people can get to further explore your ideas?
Sure. Thank you. Absolutely. Well, the first book is The Thought Exchange, and The Thought Exchange I developed at Unity of New York almost 5 years ago, and through workshops. And it's about being with your sensations and holding the thought you want to hold and being able to be with the sensations that come with them rather than running from them. And this is the way in which we can do whatever we want. We're fooled by thinking that, oh, I'm uncomfortable. That means something. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that that thought comes with discomfort. Like you want to go on the stage, your heart pounds, go on the stage. The next book is Help Is On The Way. And Help Is On The Way is based on my song, Help Is On The Way. And I took each line of the song and have a chapter of stories, essays, advice on how to be helpful to people, how to be helpful to yourself. The next book is We Can Be Kind, based on my song, We Can Be Kind, which also is ways, stories about kindness, ways in which we can be kind to others and to ourselves, a lot of quotes and stuff. Then there's How They Met. How They Met is a book where I interviewed couples of long standing to find out how they met. And it's amazing. The book is not about a how-to to meet people. It's about that you can be anywhere. You can be lost in space. You can be whatever. You never know at what moment you could meet someone. So it's a book of encouragement that people met each other in all sorts of crazy ways. Okay, then there's It's All Inside, which is a workbook. It's a good book to do a six-week course on. It's all the exercises of thought exchange that we've done over the years, and they're in order, so you can do a practical practice of picking one, doing it, picking another, and doing it. And then, strangely enough, this is the book I wrote right after Thought Exchange, but I'm back to the next book. I'm back to working. It's called The Healing Power of Negative Thoughts and Uncomfortable Sensations. Stop being afraid of your negative thoughts and uncomfortable sensations and start using them to heal. And that's what I talked about today. And I have a new book coming out at the end of the year that is 1,000 of my stories. As anyone who knows me knows, I incessantly tell stories, and I put 1,000 of them together. So they can all be gotten on Amazon. And if you want to find out more about my classes, you can write to me. It's an easy email, davidfriedmancomposer@gmail.com.